This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
Hold on to that.
Welcome back to the Shit Show 2.0.
Okay, Boomer.
Damn millennials. Wow.
Did not know that.
Even flirters who are obviously mentally ill.
You want to be my wife?
Oh, this is going to go downhill real quick.
What is going on? And welcome to Take on the World, Take Two.
With Johnny, point two.
And Mike D, point zero.
What are you telling what happened, Michael?
For the second time in three episodes, I forgot to press record.
And Michael is very anal about this. I can tell it's driving you nuts.
I mean, eating on camera.
He's even eating the pretzel. You hear him crunching on the pretzels? So, it was just a reflection of our past time before we got together today, which is kind of what we always do. Like, hey, what happened during your week? Anything cool, whatever? Anything you noticed or whatever? So,
I fucked up once again.
Make sure you comment and tell him how much of a fucking retard he is.
Oh, we could talk about that. That's something we did not talk about before.
The comments?
Yeah.
All right.
So we did our council acts.
Yes.
And Johnny is begging for someone to fucking comment. And we get a comment.
Lo and behold.
From no other than the
Rooster.
Owner. Rooster from...
No, he's not the owner, isn't he?
I don't know.
No, he's
okay. I take that back.
I don't know who he is in the company. He might be the owner.
Okay,
but
I could be right.
His name is Rooster, and one of my buddies watched our video and said that guy that commented on your video, he's been in a bunch of knife and show or knife and axe. Events, survivalist shows.
But he commented from the Council Tools account.
Account, yeah. And he, you should read it. But he gave us like the make of the steel.
Well, here's what one of the questions we asked during that episode was the divots on the side of the axe, the roughness.
Right.
What kind of forging it was. And he explained it. And I appreciated that explanation, really. Because, like, I don't understand forging and how it's done, but he explained it very well. Go back in our Facebook page and look for the Council Tool Camp Axe and read that comment because he answered all our questions.
He left a pretty long comment.
Yeah.
But my buddy has seen him at a bunch of knife and tool, whatever shows that you would go to, like kind of like a gun show. But they have like a lot of knife guys will be there too. And yeah, I thought that was awesome. That was kind of like the pinnacle of, you know.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
And it came just as Johnny was begging and begging for someone to leave a comment.
Right.
So that was a great comment. We appreciate that.
So thank you, Rooster. Shout out.
So, I want to mention that we are a proud part of the Deluxe Edition Network. This is the third time I'm saying this today, but it's the first time you're hearing it. The Deluxe Edition Network is a group of podcasters to get together. They're very helpful to one another. I am thankful to be a part of the group.
Yes, and I think I said this last time, which thank you very much for all you've done there, Deluxe Edition Network. Very grateful. Thank you so much.
So if any podcasts out there are looking for a place to call home with a group of other people that are going to support you and help you and give you tips and tricks that they use to get
massage your colon.
No one's massaging anybody's
whatever
colon.
You want.
No, they're not doing that. There's no,
oh, no
colon massages.
Damn it.
Anyway, but go to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. Check out all the great podcasts there. and specifically check out the two podcasts of the month, which is The Real Drunks, who I love listening to, and
you should be a part of.
Right.
And I want to do a collab with.
Yeah, we want
to collab. Try to, I guess.
Well, I have Matt from Real Drunks on standby waiting to come on and do my top five. He's a wrestling fan. Top five in-ring or top three in-ring wrestling injuries.
Okay.
So that's where that conversation went.
Yep.
We're not talking about deaths, and I've been talking about doing this episode for a while. However, my boy, JC Wessler, Caveman Chad, has not been able to make it up. The last time he was on his way here and his car blew up. So maybe karma's telling him not to do the show, but I unfortunately had to get a hold of Matt and say, hey, dude, I'm sorry, I got to cancel again. And he's like, no worries. He goes, whenever you're ready to do it, give me a call. So we're going to do a short collab with them, but I'd love to do a whole show with them on a movie.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we did the collab with Barrel H Flicks. I love those guys.
Yeah, that was fun.
Like, those guys are obviously great friends. Like, I say that all the time, but you can tell because they're like you and me. We just bust each other's chops and have fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't get mad at each other for busting each other's chops. Even though if you push me too hard on this not recording thing, I may smack you.
Hey, I haven't said anything yet.
No, I'm waiting for Monday.
Oh.
It's coming.
Yeah, you bust my chops for Johnny Jump Ahead.
That's true. That's true.
So, which I never fail.
And I'll tell you what, Deb's Johnny Jump Ahead and me too.
She's taking my place.
And the funny thing was, is the two times she did it, it's the same in very next line.
Well, it just shows you how in tune you are with each other.
Yeah, I know.
What? You know, the other thing that we had missed from a mishap, I don't know what happened, but somehow we lost the content.
Yes, content. This is the dude. You don't know how much it pisses me off.
I know how much it is. You like, dude, you're like ready to give up.
I hate making mistakes.
Yeah, well, what's going to happen? So
not
get me. Over it.
I must be getting Alzheimer's.
I just put that in your head when I went over to take a piss.
Yes, now that's all
now, I think that's about. That's all you think, I got dementia. No, but the one thing we had talked about was what you had called a receipt in the industry.
Oh, yeah.
So, which I didn't realize.
Like, so you were talking about a match with
it was
Randy Orton
and
Mick Foley.
And I guess it was supposed to Randy Orton was supposed to DDT, whatever his move was. I don't know what his move. DDT, I think was what it was supposed to DDT Mick Foley into tacks. He brought a big, like 50-pound sack of tacks out. And just covered the whole ring. Well, he reversed it, and Mick Foley smashed Randy Orton into the tacks. And he goes, dude, his face was priceless. He's like, his face.
What the fuck?
His face was like, his eyes were wide open, and he just like couldn't make a sound. He's like, oh! And then a ref came over to check on him, and Randy Orton says, the tacks were a bad idea. You know, there was other ones like, I don't think that might have been necessarily been a receipt. Maybe. I don't know.
No, I think that was just I don't know. Like, you don't see that. The thing is with a receipt, you don't know it's a receipt unless you're in the locker room.
I don't think it was like, you pissed me off. I'm going to get you back. I think he just kind of maybe like, yo, I'm an old school wrestler. I can change the shit.
Yeah.
If I want to
reverse
it on you.
You find out it's a receipt. Later on when people are being interviewed.
But there was one with, I think it was, damn it, help me out here. The dude with the fucking knife on his chest.
Not Batista. He went to UFC and got his ass kicked.
Yeah. Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, Brock Lesnar.
I would not fuck with that guy. He would rip my head off. But anyways, he got kneed in the face by, I forget what the wrestler was, and then he, like, right away, he two-pieced him. And they'll show you slow down. He, like, fucking two-pieced him. And there was another one where
receipt. Cha-ching.
Where he got kneed in the face. Oh, he was like neck was through the ropes, and the guy kneed him in the face through the ropes, and he came back and he clotheslined him over the ropes and out of the ring, like he was trying to rip him in half.
See, and while this conversation is not as organic as it was the first time, I'm gonna tell you something else that I didn't mention the first time. Wrestlers, while they're in the ring, will signal to other wrestlers that it's a receipt. Do you remember the old cash registers, the old timey ones? Click, 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 ching.
Yeah.
So I've seen wrestlers do that in the ring where they get stiffed and they'll just go cha-ching, boom.
But it totally makes sense. Like if you pissed me, you fucking did a cheap shot on me, I'm gonna get your ass back.
Right. One for one.
Yeah.
You don't go overboard. It's one for one.
So that whole, well, I know we bust your balls about wrestling being fake, but it's, what do you call it? What do you call it?
It's entertainment.
It's entertainment. It's not fake.
A cartoon is fake. There's nothing real about a cartoon.
It's, you know, the storylines go where you're going to make money and, you know,
you want to bring fans back. You need to entertain them. You need to make them hate you or love you.
And I'm not necessarily going to, when I drop a leg on you, like try and kill you.
No, because that's not good either.
But if I want to kick you in the face, I can totally kick you in the face. Like, who was it? Who kicked? Was it Triple H? Kicked. Oh my God. Who's the Montreal Screwjob guy?
Bret Hart.
He got kicked in the face. Whoever kicked him in the face, I forget who the guy was, but he goes, he kicked me in the face so hard, he like broke his eye socket, his nose, and like you really couldn't tell by the thing, but it's like, dude, it's like he was trying to take him out. Like they didn't want him there.
Last night I got together with the guy who trained me in the wrestling business and a couple of people involved in the wrestling business, Love Bug. I always take Nathan along because Nathan loves hearing his stories, even though he's heard most of them like 100 times. And one of the stories Love Bug was telling was we were wrestling a tag team, Triple Threat. And
I remember what you said before. You're like, fuck him, I'll name him. His name is Triple Threat.
Well, no, I fucking name his name Self-Employed.
Or Self-Employed, yeah.
That was the tag team. And fuck you guys still, because you're pussies. But, so one of them stiffed Love Bug really bad. Like, punched him full in the back of the neck. Like, dangerous bad. And I just barreled over the ropes. And it just looked like I was coming to save my partner. So everybody thought it was shtick. But I fucking let him know that he was not appreciated.
I let all 400 pounds of me know that he was not welcome.
I said, you, sir, are invited to ingest a satchel of Richards. and then they've afraid to come back in the locker room. So
couldn't even save face and like come back and be like, dude, I'm sorry.
The one dude back in the locker room, he's like, you see that? You see how he hit Love Bug? That bullshit. He can't have that shit out there. He goes, Marshall, you did the right thing. So they tried to sneak in the back door. He goes, they tried to sneak in the back. They tried to come right in the back door. So he let him in and then stood there, wouldn't let him back out. And we had a nice little conversation about respect and not overdoing it.
I'm sure there was no loud words exchanged.
Probably none.
Man, I wish I would have met you guys. I feel like I would have liked to try that.
Dude, I'm going to tell you something. If you were in and around the business while we were in it, you would have had so much fun.
I think so.
You're a little nuts. A little bit. You do some questionable things. None of it would have been questioned in the business. Which is why we get along so well, because
I feel like you have your like chance to be like an actor.
Yes.
But, you know, like, you don't have to be like some kind of A-list actor. Like you're developing this persona that either you're a heel or you're a What do they call the other person?
Baby face or heel?
Baby face or heel?
So
I don't. What do you think I would have been, a baby face or a heel?
Oh, I would have made you shave, and I would have had you a baby face, and then I'd let you grow that patchy beard out,
and then be a heel,
and then be a heel. No, like, here's the thing, like, and without going too far down that road, me and Love Bug had to be escorted from a building twice by the police. Once by the Reading police and once by the police in Emmaus. Because in the one case, something happened that we thought the fan was in on, and she was not. And we felt horrible because, like, this girl, it was a girl's birthday. She had cancer. So they were trying to honor her. They brought her a birthday cake. And we were wrestling these two hillbillies, Hooch and Holler Boys. And they said, oh, yeah, we want you to come out and smash our faces in the cake. And I'm like, you sure that's cool? Like, I don't want to upset this girl. Like, she's been through enough. Like, you know me. Like, kids to me are...
She's like a kid, a victim of violence or something. You come out there like... just like ruining her life.
So she's bawling. Her parents are pissed. Oh, everybody in the crowd is pissed. So we sent someone out for another cake. And had her back into the locker room, and everybody in the locker room sang happy birthday to her. We apologized to her and her parents, like, you know, we're sorry. It was a shtick. We thought you were down with it, you know. And I don't know if Hooch and Holler Boys set us up, or if they thought they talked to him, or one of them said, "Yeah, I'll talk to him," and the other one didn't. Whatever. But they were okay with us then. But we went back out. There were people throwing fucking bottles and cans and chairs at us, and we had to wait until the entire venue emptied. And just the Reading, and there were still people outside waiting for us. We were like 20 minutes, it's crickets, all the lights are off in the building, and the police then say, okay, we'll take you out to your car, and there's still people out there threatening us.
God, people take wrestling so seriously.
Well, I'm gonna tell you something, what we did was kind of fucked up. But it was done in fun. It was done as part of a gag. It was not done. There was no malice at all intended. It was a hurt piece, bro. Like, that's one of those nights where I feel like I do right now for not pressing record.
You know, the only regret I have was when I first met you, we went to that cigar shop in Lehigh, and you're like, you're looking out the window, and you're like, oh my God, that's one of your fucking wrestlers showed up, somebody you wrestled against, and I didn't really know you that well. I think it was the first time we ever hung out, and you're like, yo, pretend like you're a super fan and like go over there and like run out the door and like, and you know, tell him like, oh my God, it's such and such, da-da-da-da-da. And like, I clammed up and I didn't do any of that. And now, if and now that were I'd have run out there now and just been like, whatever, just done what I did.
Because we know each other so well now, you would have run out there and you would have sold it like a motherfucker.
Yeah, I would have sold it.
But, you know, hey.
I forget what his name was. You don't remember that at all?
I remember it. I don't remember who it was. But, so... That's well off track.
Yeah, and then we all three sat down and you guys were sharing war stories of wrestling. And
dude, I used to go down to that shop down in Easton, Bethlehem, and I would go down there every month for the Thirsty Thursday.
I think we went to like two different, I think we went to a bar and we went to a cigar shop. Well, we first went to a cigar shop and you got me on, I don't know what those one cigars were, but they were fucking awesome.
It was probably Rocky Patel.
I think it was.
Yeah. I love Rocky
Patel. It was Patel's. A little bit sweet.
No. I gave you something. I gave you a Drew Estate flavored cigar, because if people are just getting into it.
Yeah. Drew Estate sounds.
Yeah.
Because I like sweet cigars.
I think it was a Java. I think it was a Drew Estate Java.
And it was like, it wasn't that long. It was probably like that long.
A Robusto.
That's what it was. I remember that name. A Robusto.
Robusto. But good times, good times. So we done? Did we do the Extradition Network? Yes, we yep. did.
Unless you want to do it again.
Do you know what I got to do? I got to say that this episode is sponsored by Sweet Z's Mattress.
Sweet ZZZ.
So you'll hear more about that in the commercial I put up, either before or after this. I don't know, because we're pretty deep into this now. And ladies and gentlemen, with the greatness of Take on the World, it was bound to happen sooner or later. This episode is sponsored by Sweet Z Mattress. You can use code TOTW15 to get 15% off your order. They sent me a pillow, and it's nice and soft. And I thought, oh, this is going to be too soft for me to sleep on. But I tell you what, I lay down on it. I don't even toss and turn at night. I just lay on my back where I'm comfortable and sleep away. And if I do turn to my side, it's just as comfortable. It feels like it's going to be too soft, but it's nice and firm because of the three-layer design they have. The outside is pure cotton, so it helps keep you cool. Inside is a vegetable cashmere. So this is 100% plant-based down. So if being sustainable and environmental is important to you, you're going to want to check these guys out. The website is, it's sweetzzzmattress.com. They sell mattresses, they sell bed sheets, they sell pillows. You're going to want to check it out. There's a 50-day full money-back guarantee on these. So if you don't like it, you send it back, get your money back. So make sure you check them out. Sweet Z Mattress, TOTW15 to get 15% off your order. I've been sleeping on this pillow for a week now, and frankly, I love it. I put my other pillows on the floor, and I'm only sleeping on this one.
Hey guys, Matt coming at you from The Real Drunks. Hey, if you're into movies, booze, craft beers, and just shooting the shit with your friends, join myself, Jake, and Alyssa on The Real Drunks on the Deluxe Edition Network and anywhere you get your podcast from. That's The Real Drunks, R-E-E-L, The Real Drunks. Check us out.
This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
And we're back
with,
I don't know,
World That We Take On with Mike D and Johnny.
World That We Take On? we just had an impromptu visitor.
Yes.
Chuck us, interrupt us. my neighbor, good guy, brought me some longboard from Kona Brewing Company.
Yes, very tasty.
His girlfriend, Debbie, bought it for me.
Liquid Aloha.
I actually really like this stuff. I always have.
It's good. It's nice and very light and sweet.
So let's jump into today's topic.
Yes. What do we got today, Michael?
Well, you brought this up because you saw a documentary. This is the federal penitentiary in Marion, Illinois, known as United States Penitentiary.
Whoa. There's no noise in Illinois.
I just said there was.
You did.
Did you ever live there?
No.
Then you don't fucking know. I did.
But you said Illinois.
I know. I lived there. I know there's noise there. United States Penitentiary, Marion, USP Marion. It was built in 1963, and it was opened the same year. And
that's a young prison.
Yeah. I say fuck you to all those builders who say, it takes us 5 years to build a jail. Because they did it in a year, opened it the same year. And it's still open now, so
kiss my grits.
Oh, I can go for some grits.
Oh, cheesy grits with shrimp.
And bacon.
Oh. Anyway, this prison was meant to as a replacement for the maximum security federal prison on Alcatraz Island, which also closed the same year. So when it was built, it was meant to house 500 of the most dangerous and violent criminals the federal prison system.
And I think what Alcatraz closed because it was just dilapidated.
Well, it was dilapidated. He had the escape. And then when they were going through, they saw how the salt water was just eating away at the concrete. And it was just crumbling.
Have you ever been there?
I have not. You have, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I caught all kinds of shit.
What? No.
From
no,
you.
Not, hold it. Not, hold well, it. Hold it.
From
hold
certain it. People.
You caught shit not for going to Alcatraz. You caught shit.
But that's why I went there.
Hold on. You intentionally went on vacation to San Francisco.
Yeah. So you know how long.
What was your nickname for many years?
San Francisco treat. Which it's all good. But that's why I went to San Francisco, because that was my main goal was to. I was there for 3 days. And that's all I wanted to see was Alcatraz Island. And I did. And it was fucking worth it.
I was in San Francisco for 12 hours.
Mm.
And I left.
Were you there in the Navy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you didn't.
Now we have another interruptus.
Who's that?
It's Nathan interruptus.
Hey, come on in, buddy. Got a chair for you right here or here.
Sit in the visitor's seat. I don't know if he's going to be on camera. He's not.
How is work?
You got to slide that chair in, buddy.
Oh, man. Making me do work.
Always, man.
I'm going to have to adjust that so Nathan gets on camera. So what we did not mention, even though we have started, this is actually episode 99.
99.
And what I really wanted you here for is episode 100, but you can sit in on 99 if you want.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I like having you here.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
Do you want to, should we push the camera or the monitor back so Nate can read it too?
Well, he's going to have a hard time reading it from that side anyway. You want to sit on the other side? So, as I was saying, this is episode 99.
99
problems, but the bitch ain't one.
So episode 100, we're going to do 99 bottles of Take on the World on the Wall.
Okay. That's clever. That's clever.
So right now we're at USP Marion. John watched a documentary on this prison.
Okay.
And I watched some of the documentary, but I didn't watch much.
I get it. I think I watched it twice, maybe three times.
Doing your research, eh?
I don't really recall a whole lot from it. Just some main points. I mean, there's not really. I'm sure as your father reads it, shit will pop up in my head. But I think there's some things that.
And that's how we do it there, Nathan.
There's some things I remember that aren't in here, I'm sure, that I'll touch on.
Make sure you're talking to that mic, because that's not the same mic as these.
I know. Okay. I know.
All right. So the facility was built in 63, the same year that Alcatraz was closed.
Alcatraz.
It was built and opened in the same year.
That's pretty quick for a prison, isn't it?
Well, that's what I said.
What did you actually say?
I said, F you to all the people building prisons now. It takes them 5 years to build a prison. So in the early years of its operation, it was pretty unremarkable. There wasn't much, not much to hoopla or problems. But in the late 70s and early 80s, you started to have a lot of gang violence among the inmates in the federal prisons. And that was due to prison overcrowding was one thing. And the prison overcrowding was due to the war on drugs. All of a sudden, all these people were getting arrested and given long prison terms for drug offenses. So they're in there for nonviolent crimes. And basically the only way they could survive in jail was to become a part of one of these gangs for protection.
Or hold somebody's pocket.
Yeah. That'll get you anywhere.
The rise in prison gangs and the influence of organized crime within the jail itself or the prisons itself was another factor. Gangs were forming on racial and ethnic lines, pitting one group against another. And many of these inmates were serving, like I said, long-term sentences for nonviolent drug crimes.
Climes?
Climes.
Climes.
You see the plethora of cans.
Are we recording?
We are recording this time.
Oh, you
Nathan,
made...
Nathan, we did another, I think, almost 40 minutes without recording.
No audio, so no pissed. Video.
Nothing.
Nothing. If we just had audio, I'd be okay with that. I would just put the audio up and be, we had nothing.
And there was some good, there was some
there,
good,
there was really like,
there was some good shit.
It's like, this is the second time I did it now. And the last time, there was some fucking awesome content. We'll never get back. Yeah. And this time, again, awesome content. Never get it back.
Hey, you're going to have even better content now that I'm here.
That's right.
That's why I wanted you to stay.
There you go.
That's why I wanted you to stay.
Here, lift that mic up just a hair so you don't got to bend down every time. There you go.
Yeah, put it right in front of your face.
Oh, yeah. You want me to take a bite out of it?
Are you talking into the words that say newer?
I can't even see the words that say newer.
Well, I forget where they were on that one.
Oh, they're right here.
Okay, that's where you need to talk into.
Okay.
So yeah, spin that thing around a little bit.
And tilt it back. Push it down. There you go.
Oh.
Push it up. No, just the front part. No, stop. Put your hand. Your left hand. Right there, and push up. There you go. Look at that.
Oh, wow.
No, I can hear better now.
Yeah, sounds much better.
All right.
Okay. They say that lack of prison programming also caused a lot of this tension. It did not give the inmates the skills to succeed or the education to succeed after they were released. I call bullshit on that one.
Okay.
Well, like I said before, it's that's the last place you want to go to get your
right. But what I commented here was, those programs weren't so much educational as it was to keep them occupied.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Oh,
just something to do
to keep their mind off of doing time, to keep their mind off of doing crime.
I can't even imagine they had anything back in that day.
It wasn't much, but it was mostly work programs like building stuff, making license plates, such, you know, that's where that trope comes in.
The license plate trope was real?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, okay.
It was considered hard labor.
I think that's where all Pennsylvania license plates are made or were
at one time.
Was it Graniford or somewhere in Pennsylvania? Well,
there's a lot of prisons that have prison industries. Burke County used to have prison industries. A bunch of county jails, a bunch of state jails had prison industries, and they would build certain things, and they tried not to cross over the line of what someone else was building. There used to be a lot of clothing made in the prisons. They made furniture. They made work on vehicles.
I remember when we took the tour of Eastern State in Philadelphia, that the prisoners who would make carpentry, like tables, they would make more than the warden was making by selling their tables and whatever carpentry stuff they made.
Wow.
And could you imagine that? A prisoner making more than the warden?
Wow.
Yeah, I think they put a quick end to that.
I said, yeah, warden, sure. Bitch, sit down. You ain't making as much as me. Putting all these factors together created a violent and dangerous environment in many federal prisons, leading to a surge of violence and unrest that lasted for years. So in response to all this violence, the Federal Bureau of Prisons
can still hear you crunching.
Are you crunching?
I saw him put it down and he like leans back. I hear.
We don't crunch on air, Nathan. We don't crunch on air. Oh, the three of us together is going to be fucking fun.
I'm sure.
So the BOP, or Federal Bureau of Prisons, began to implement a new policy known as control units, which were designed to isolate the most violent and disruptive inmates in general population. Now, when we talked about this before, when I wasn't taping, we said that this was the groundwork for what would eventually become the Supermax prisons in the United States.
Yes.
I was about to say, so this is where control units came from.
Yes. This is the beginning of control units, which became Supermax, which became ADX Florence, which is a show that I did on my lockup series.
Yeah.
And we had talked about, like, I normally do all the prisons on our lockup series, and I just run through the information real quick. It's not a long drawn out thing, but I think this one deserved the long form touch.
Okay.
Because this is the basis where all the Supermaxes in the United States came from.
And
this was
and
the first level five.
Level five. This is where this is ultimately would lead to CERT and five man cell extraction teams come from.
Right. Now, and when I started in the corrections field, at the first jail I worked at, I was on the main cell extraction team.
I would put a big motherfucker like you.
I wasn't this big then.
Point man.
I was just strong and I could take a punch. So,
were you a point man? One, two, three,
four? No, I was number one.
You were number one?
I was with the shield. I went in with the shield and pinned them.
Oh, okay. You guys did it with a shield.
But we did it with a taser shield.
Taser shield.
Those hurt.
Did we
always trained with just, if you were number one man, you went in, but you didn't have a shield. You just.
Well, see, you could, this shield was curved.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about. You pin them up against the wall, but this one had a taser in it.
Yeah. I got hit with that. It fucking sucks.
Did I ever tell you that story?
No.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So we were training and we had this taser shield. So we went in and I forget how it went. I went in and the guy behind me, I was actually fucking right arm. So I went in and took right arm and he brought the shield in, went right arm. And the guy like twisted and he turned, he put the shield right on me and hit the button.
Oh,
I went right to the floor. Like that hurt. So I'm on the floor and they finish the cell extraction. I get up, I do my thing. I do what I got to do. We get out and he's like, oh dude, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm like, what the, you know,
did you give him a receipt?
I was much angrier back then. I'm like, dude, I was yelling, what the fuck were you doing? Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I said, okay, I get it. It was a mistake. Let me see that shield.
Oh, boy.
So he handed me the shield. And just as I zapped him with the shield, I just pushed it up against, pressed the button. The lieutenant walked in. And he's like, what the fuck are you doing? And I'm like, he zapped me. I zapped him.
It's not like you couldn't fight through it, but I got
it hit hurt. It hurt
the shoulder blades. We had the option of walking into it or walk forward into it or back up into it. And I back up into it and I got the curved shield, like you're saying, towards your body between the shoulder blades.
Ah.
And it felt like somebody hit me in the back with a bat.
Well, this one had four strips on it, the one we were using.
I remember this thing had the whole shield was a grid because we used to go on the unit and do medication. And they're like, I was new and they're like, they handed me the shock shield. And like, when we open the cell, just hit the button a couple times. And so like, it's medication time. And like, we're there with the nurse, slide the door open. There's like two officers and me there. And like, oh, hell no, I don't want none of that. And they just back up and like, no, you're cool. Come get your medication. No, with that thing there.
Don't tase me, dude. Don't tase me.
Keep that away from me.
I just think that was just one of those things because I was new. And like, we don't always do this, but just you're new. So we're going to
fuck with you.
Yeah, we're going to fuck with you a little bit. But well, I tell you like that, it did hurt. But I'd never, we were trained.
I'm talking like 12 years before that, there was no safety protocols on them.
What was it, like a copper wire with like a
pretty much so, dude. It was ugly.
Fucking... Oh my god,
it glowed red if you held the button too long.
Tesla coil
might blow you up, send you 15 years into the past.
USDA certified.
dude, I did so much stupid shit with the when it all this new equipment came up when I got into corrections. So tasers, the shock shields, the beanbag rounds.
I'm terrified of the taser. The actual like the handheld taser they have now.
Did I ever tell you that story?
I don't want to get shot by a taser.
I couldn't. Hearing them, seeing them, just the thought of it, I couldn't.
I don't know if I could say this. I don't know if I could say this on.
Probably not. If you don't think you can say it, don't say it.
I can't. I walked into a training session the one time and I heard.
I can't say it, but here we go.
No, I'm not going to say it, but that's all I'm going to say. I walked into a training session and. Maybe you want to edit this out.
Dude, this is going to be the most nightmarish edit ever.
All right. Well, then I won't say it. I'll tell you later.
Tell me later.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
I'll tell you my taser story. Oh. Because I don't give a shit.
Oh, of course.
So a salesperson came to basically sell tasers.
This story.
To the jail.
I've heard this before.
So, I said, there's no way that's going to take me off my feet. And the guy said, yes, it is. Yes, it'll trust me. It'll take you. I said, no, it's not. And I said, well, I'll let you tase me. He goes, we got to sign waivers. I'm not fucking, I don't give a shit. Just tase me. So I go out and I take newspapers and I put it under my uniform shirt. And he tases me and it hits the newspapers, does nothing. And he's like that. And then you see the newspaper sticking out. He's like,
think you have told me this.
That's cheating. And he walked up to me because after you discharge it, you have the
dry stun.
The dry stun? He dry stun out.
You know, you seem to always like to give those guys a hard time.
I was a little asshole. I will say
it. He's always testing the bounds.
That's how I got shot with the beanbag rounds and had huge welts on my and bruises on my chest because I told him there's no way that's going to stop me. So he said,
your father is somebody who learns the hard way.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Just like me, probably just like you.
No, Nathan's actually pretty smart about learning shit.
Sometimes. I mean, keep in mind, I was the kid that you said you'd only do it once.
Yeah, that's true. So with the beanbag rounds, the guy came in and I said, he goes, well, what I'll do is I'll rack around and I'll shoot you with it. And then you take a step and I'll rack around. I said, okay. So he got like three in. It hurt so bad. And I said, well, let's do it my way now. You rack around in and I'm going to charge you. When I started charging him, he missed me. I grabbed the gun and unarmed him.
We'll do it my way. You bend over. I'll rack around, stick the barrel up your asshole and shoot.
But like, that's why I always had an opposition to regular 12 gauge shotguns inside the jail.
Yeah.
You know, I had no idea I was ever going to be thrust in the world of,
world of corrections.
I never knew I was going to be put in that position, but it just so happened that my skill set landed me there. And, you know, I never ever desired to be a cop or, be in law enforcement or anything. It just happened and here I am.
See, I always did.
I had no fucking desire.
My dream job when I was a kid is I wanted to be a helicopter pilot for the Pennsylvania State Police.
You know what my dream job is?
That's a pretty cool job.
I wanted to be a scientist.
What kind of science?
Like
anal diseases.
I always remember being at my babysitter's house, and I would take apart the back of the toys and I would rip the resistors out and like, this thing can go here, and I'll move that resistor. And I would like rewire this thing, and I would totally destroy the toy to where it wouldn't work anymore. But in my mind, I was like, I was being that, you know,
I'm a genius.
And
you were Jimmy Neutron.
I made a rocket ship out of this.
It was Johnny Neutron.
But you know, that's what I had always envisioned for myself, like just or being an archaeologist.
Archaeologist.
I always loved that. I thought that would be so fun to do that. Just like
you watch too much Indiana Jones.
Travel. Oh, so yeah. I'm a dreamer, man. You know, I would like just envision myself traveling around and like finding like dinosaur bones and like just, you know, not necessarily Indiana Jones, but like just being
like a
scientist, you know?
I could dig that.
To me, that really appealed to me.
Nathan, what was your childhood dream?
Which one?
The one from last week.
Game designer. Before that, it was software engineer. Before that, it was game designer again. Before that, it was field research scientist. Before that, it was scientist. Before that, it was police officer for a little bit. Before that, it was train driver.
Yeah, he wanted to be an engineer. Whoop. That's Thomas the Train Engine days.
Yeah,
so that takes up the last 6 weeks. What about before that?
So yeah, you're kind of like me. Like you're like a dreamer.
Yeah.
You know, you just like you have these.
Yeah, you have to be when you're a kid. You should be.
You have these envisions in your head, like, dude, that'd be so fun. Like, and I don't know, you just sucks you never get to obtain that dream. Like I would love still to this day, I would love to be like, you know, an archaeologist and like go to like Egypt or
without going to school.
I mean, how much schooling do you need to do that?
Like 10 years.
Really?
I don't know.
Probably. I can learn on the job.
It was Dr. Jones.
You sweep in the dust till you find a bone, and like, how hard is that?
Yeah, and then, you know, occasionally you run away from boulders.
Yeah.
You just insulted the whole archaeology field.
Yeah.
How hard can it be? Just sweep away the bones.
Sweep away the dust on top of the bones.
Anyway, let's get back to
prisons.
USP Marion, which was selected as one of the sites for control units, which was the birthplace for prisons like ADX Florence, AdMax, and Supermax prisons that we previously covered on our lockup series. See link below.
Lockup series. Go watch that and then come back here and then go watch some more.
Yeah. In 1978, USP Marion became the site of a control unit and became the first level 6 prison in the United States. Like level 1 being trustees.
Yeah.
Level 6 being get the fuck in your cell and shut up.
Nah.
The unit was built to house 84 inmates in single cells with strict restrictions on their movement, communication with others. Now, we covered some of that with the Pennsylvania system.
Mm-hmm.
When we did the Eastern State,
I think in the documentary they even mentioned about them going back to this, to that mentality, because a lot of this was, well, after I think I'm jumping ahead here, but after a while they pretty much went back to that mentality of the Eastern State Penitentiary.
Yeah. Keep quiet, be penitent, and stay in yourself.
You know, for a second, I thought you weren't saying that about the subject and more. You were saying that directed at him.
No, not Johnny.
Just for a second.
Oh, we got Mikey 2.0. He can kind of get into your head and
nobody can get in my head, bro.
I don't think anybody wants in there. No, all due respect.
Truth. Very, yeah. Very good timing on the
I don't think anybody wants to be in anybody's head. Did you imagine being in my head?
No.
You know.
The cells had solid steel doors and the inmates were not allowed to leave their cells for more than 1 hour a day. Of course, the control unit concept did not go without its distractors. There was a lot of people who rose up against us and said, this isn't right. You can't do that. It's inhumane.
Of course.
Well, you're always going to have that.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what you do. You can never please everybody.
Yeah.
Like the people who say, well, that you can't do that to people. Okay, well, go work in the jail.
Well, you can't murder people either.
Go work in that jail with those people and, you know, worry about someone stabbing you in the neck every day. The implementation of control units at USP Marion was met with controversy and criticism from civil rights groups and some members of the legal community. There was lawsuits filed. There was protest.
No, we won't go.
Fuck you. The argument was the conditions of the control unit constituted cruel and unusual punishment. I disagree. Murdering somebody is cruel and unusual. So,
very cruel and very unusual.
The isolation and lack of social interaction could lead to severe psychological damage. Now, we talked about this when we did the Reykjavik murders.
Side note. Dude, that was the most confusing. I had no...
You had a headache after that.
Dude, I was like, what the fuck are you two talking... Because it was you and Lexi, but I did no research. And I was like, of course. And I'm like, I'm so lost. I'm like, who's who? Who drowned in the snow? What happened? Like, anyways, anyways.
I guess you'll just have to go watch it. Yeah. To find out.
Yeah, why don't you go listen to yourself on that one?
I don't think I even talked the whole episode.
I would wager I know why you were confused. despite the criticisms, the control unit USP Marion continued to operate throughout the 80s and into the 90s. However, during this time, there were several incidents of violence at the prison, including the murder of two correction officers in 1983.
And this is when it really changed.
Yes. A lot of stuff changed after this.
This is when it became, I think this is what, where it changed to the level six, the CERT team coming in, which wasn't called CERT.
It was ERT then.
Was it ERT?
I think so. It was just an emergency response team.
And it was headed by some army guy or something like that. And kudos to him. He came up with the five-man extraction team.
Which, I'll tell you, at first, I thought, what the fuck? But the fact is that the place where we work now implemented that after the place where I used to work. So we did it down there. And so I've done it both ways.
I think they still do it to this day.
Oh, yeah. But I've done it both ways. Like, the bum rush and the five-man team. I've done them both. And the bum rush, I'm getting kicked in the head by you. You know,
I mean, what's the bum rush?
Just everybody rushes in and grabs the inmate. And everybody's throwing punches and everybody's kicking and everybody's trying to control the guy. So that's the bum rush. That's the way it used to be.
Like, this is the classic, like, we're going to video this.
No.
It's a five-man team.
Yeah, that when they went to that, I was skeptical because I thought, well, that's not going to be intimidating. But it is. It's very intimidating. And it takes a lot of power from the person being extracted because you have someone controlling every appendage of your body.
Yeah, I think I think what they all want is accountability. They want to make sure they're like, hey, we weren't beating the fuck out of this guy. You know, we have a certain, this is what we do. This is what we show.
Right.
And that's what we did.
And I'll tell you, we were very strict about that. Like you did not deviate. If you were right arm, you did not deviate from right arm. All you concentrated on was right arm. You controlled that arm until it was secured.
Camera footage is so shitty. I'm sure there was some cheap shots thrown in there.
Never, never, ever, never once, ever in the history of mankind.
Yeah.
But compared to the old way, when there was nothing but cheap shots, and if another CO didn't like you, you were getting a cheap shot.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. If you're doing it that way where everyone just piles in.
I could tell you stories.
Cheap shots.
But the ERT, its roots are right here.
The very roots. This has started it all.
So I'm going to talk about these two murders and the people who committed them.
Okay.
What their background was. On October 22nd, 1983, two officers, Merrill Curtis and Robert Hoffman, were attacked and killed by two inmates who were a member of a militant organization known as United Freedom Front, the UFF. The UFF was a left-wing revolutionary group that was responsible for a number of bombings and robberies throughout the United States in the 70s and 80s. So when you watch all these cop shows, when they're talking about these freedom fronts, it was based on this. It was based on these people. The two inmates who attacked the officers at Marion, Brinks driver turned radical George Lester and former
Symbionese
Liberation Army member Thomas Manning, who served time for UFF related crimes. The attack occurred on the officers while they were escorting the two inmates from their cell to the prison's law library. Lester and Manning had obtained homemade weapons and were able to overpower the officers and stab them to death. So,
oh my God.
I'll speak from personal experience. That's the one thing that worries me when I work inside the jail. Someone getting a shank and stabbing me. Like, my fear is someone's going to stab me in the neck. I'm going to bleed out.
I had a dream not too long ago.
I've had several dreams.
That I got stabbed to death on a unit.
You know what my dream was the other day? That I was working in the field behind the range, and I got shot.
Well, that could totally happen.
It almost happened.
Kind of ricocheted the face.
We were just working down there the other day, and I'm all the way down right behind the range. I hear pap, 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 pap. Now, luckily, it was the DA's office doing testing on a weapon. But, like, I didn't know who the fuck it was. It was like us in Philly with the cheesesteaks. Who's shooting at us?
I got a ricochet in the nuts one time, and then like 2 months later, I got a ricochet in the jaw and cut my chin open, and I was bleeding. But the dream I had a while ago was I was on one unit, and I'm like there helping out to do like unclog a toilet or something, and. You know, when you always go around and it's like busy and you got all a bunch of guys around you and some dude just poked me through and through. And I got my radio, I hit the button and he just started attacking me and I was just like running away. And then I think I woke up in like a dead sweat. I'm like,
but that's why you guys have stuff like the 5-man extraction teams, because stuff like that.
Like, if you go in a cell, like, to extract somebody, and they have a weapon, and you do it the old school way, someone's going to get poked, period.
Yeah.
If you do it the 5-man way, the likelihood is no one's getting poked. And the likelihood is that inmate's going to come out of it unscathed. It's safer for everybody, honestly. And I was very skeptical of it when it first came around. But when I performed a couple cell extractions, I'm like, this shit works. So whoever came up with it, kudos.
Yeah, it's five. Well,
probably saved a lot of men's lives.
I've never done a 2-man extraction.
I've done a 1-man extraction.
No. When you've got two guys in a cell instead of one, and so it's five against two. So now you got to focus on that one person, and what is that other guy doing?
Well, usually
it's a little more difficult with that 5-on-2.
Speaking from experience.
Oh, boy.
Usually the person who's not guilty of anything just backs off and stands against the wall.
I think that's what they told us. Like he'll just step aside. Like, I don't want nothing of this. And then, you know, so
I won't tell the whole story, but because of statute of limitations, blah, blah, blah. I was doing count at a jail that I worked at. Not the one we work at now. And you had to look in the cell, and there was four guys in each cell, and someone spit on me through the gate. And I called for him to crack the gate. Well, when we did count, the guys on the other floors would watch us in the jail because there was only one guy in that section. And there's 130 inmates. So he gets on the radio, says, "Don't crack that gate, don't crack that gate," because he saw what happened. The gate cracked, so the board officer stopped it and then starts closing it. Well, it closes behind me because I'm inside now. So I didn't even have to ask who spit on me, because you had three guys like this and one guy like this. And that's the end of the story.
Yep. I haven't gotten spit on.
I've been spit on. I've had shit thrown on me. I've had piss thrown on me.
I'm sure that got to you.
I haven't had shit and piss thrown on me, but I've had shit and piss on me from doing other things.
Oh, my first freaking night.
What I didn't like was like when you're on the showers, like you can't tell if they're like throwing shit on you. And you get a sprinkle on the back and you look up, you're like, what the fuck? And it's like, oh, it's just like the guy's coming out of the shower. And like, I don't think so.
Because I worked in the older part of the jail. My first night there, they brought in an inmate who was known to smear shit all over his own body.
Why?
So they put him in a cell. 15 minutes later, he's smeared in shit.
Why?
And we had to go in and basically wash him.
Why?
And because I was the junior guy, I got to do it. Lucky me.
Lucky you.
I don't know. It's mental illness, dude. Like back then, there were still state hospitals. A lot of these guys went to the state hospitals. Now, a lot of these guys end up, like in this time with this jail, a lot of the people there were just criminals with some mental health issues. Nowadays, the same place is mental health issues that are criminals. Mm-hmm. Because the state hospitals have been closed because of budget cuts. And
yeah, it's not what we
have
need.
We have to deal with those people, and it's not easy.
I can't imagine it being.
You guys hash this out. I'll be right back.
This is how we do, Nate.
So I'm going to go back to the murder of these two officers.
Okay.
The incident also led to increased security and control units at USP Marion, as some critics argue the strict isolation and lack of social interaction of these units could lead to increased violence and radicalization among inmates. And that could be true, but like you have to do something.
Yeah, you have to.
And it's hard. I think there's a fine line of what's safe and what's damaging.
Yeah.
And there's people who are paid much more than me who have that knowledge that I don't.
Okay.
Because I could give my opinion, but they ain't going to listen to it. The two inmates responsible for the murder were tried, convicted, and both were sentenced to death.
Good job. You were in here for life or whatever you were. Now, death row. Congratulations.
So Manning was his sentence was later commuted to prison without parole. Lester died of cancer while he was on death row. The incident raised concerns about the effectiveness of the control units in preventing violence among inmates, which I don't think was a fair assessment, but you know, no matter what precautions you take any place with anything, stuff's going to kick off. It is what it is.
Yeah.
So in response to the violence and concerns about the control unit, the BOP began to make changes at the facility in the 1990s. Control unit was eventually closed. And the prison was configured to house both maximum and medium security inmates in separate facilities. So basically what they did is said, okay, we're going to open this part for medium security, but we're still going to have our maximum security over here. We're going to treat them the same, which is pretty much what they did.
Okay.
The prison did at that point adopt new programs and policies aimed at reducing violence, providing better rehabilitation and education opportunities for inmates, which, okay, some of them might work, but I honestly don't believe that they're rehabilitative. I think they're more redirective, where they redirect their focus onto accomplishing something rather than fighting or whatever.
Okay.
I remember watching that documentary, and they interviewed a couple CEOs from that time period where both those officers were killed in the same day. And the second one, I don't really understand. It was the somehow he was being walked in front, and he went to another cell, and the guy gave him a cuff key, and then a shank or something. The one CO is like, they're fucking animals. That's all they are. They're fucking animals.
I did see that part.
And he goes, when you walk, he's like, I walked the night shift. You'd hear them sharpening their blades on the concrete. He's like, you could never tell where it came from. You know, he's like, you try and hunt it down. He's like, but they had all day. Like,
some of that was for offensive reasons. Some of it was for protective reasons. Like, we've seen that.
But according to him, there was a lot of shanks in that place.
I believe it. Well, if we did a shakedown of our jail right now, you'd find a ton of shanks. You always will. So today, USP Marion still operates and retains a minimum or medium security status. While it had a controversial past, the facility has undergone significant changes and improvements over the years to ensure the safety of the inmates and staff, blah, 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 blah. So as with all of my lockup things, I've called out a couple high-profile, notorious inmates that were here.
Okay.
So, Nathan, do you know who John Gotti is?
I recognize the name. I can't put a crime to the name, but I know the name.
John Gotti was a former boss of the Gambino crime family.
That's where I recognize it.
So from New York.
El Mafioso. New York and Chicago. But he's no more known for New York, but they spread to Chicago.
Yeah. He was the Teflon Don.
Yes. Because they tried to get him on like so many charges, and he always skated. And they finally got, you know what they got him on?
Tax evasion.
Racketeering, tax evasion. Gotti was sentenced to life in prison and in 1992. And was transferred to USP Marion in 1994. He remained there until his death in 2002. Nathan, I'm not gonna ask John because I know he knows these names. I like your,
your. I know all these names. I'm pre-reading them. I know all of them.
Your Gen Z perspective.
Oh, Jesus.
Do you know who Terry Nichols is?
Terry Nichols, yeah.
Oklahoma City bomber.
Yes.
Okay. He was convicted co-conspirator in 1995 Oklahoma City bombing that killed 168 people. Nichols was sentenced to life in prison and housed at USP Marion from 1997 to 2004. Nathan.
Yes.
Do you know who Ramzi Youssef is?
I recognize the name Youssef, but...
What's going on? He was the mastermind of the 93.
I'm grieving. I'm grieving.
Oh my God.
The first World Trade Center bombing.
Yes.
Youssef was sentenced to life in prison in 1998, was transferred to USP Marion, and where he remained until 2002. So the next one, Nathan, I'm going to ask you again. Do you know who Theodore Kaczynski is?
This is another name I recognize.
It's a name you probably hear culture-wise.
Yeah, culture. But, I was going to say generally thrown around.
Yes. So he was known as the Unabomber.
Yeah.
Kaczynski was responsible for a string of bombings between 1978 and 1995 that killed 3 people and injured 23 others. He was sentenced to life in 1998 and was housed at USP Marion until 2006.
Do you know where the bombings were? Because I know he's the Unabomber, but I don't know where.
I think there was bombings all over the country.
Yeah, he was from, I think, Colorado, Utah, and he mailed bombings out to, like, D.C.
Oh, all around. Okay.
So, Nathan, I'll ask you again. Do you know who Richard Reed is?
I can't say that it exactly rings a bell.
Also known as the Shoe Bomber. Richard Reed attempted to detonate a hidden bomb in his shoe on a flight from Paris to Miami in 2001. He was sentenced to life in prison in 2003 and housed at USP Marion until 2012.
Shoe bomber. I was thinking the underwear bomber.
Oh,
hold on. Oh, underwear bomber.
He made some kind of bomb that evaded the scans at the airport. It was in his underwear, and when he tried to detonate it, all it did was burn his neither parts.
Yeah, because I remember somebody making the
that's what you get.
Him a point of a joke at work. It was like, you know, he was the fruit of the fruit of the boom.
Yeah, the fruit of the boom. I remember fruit that
of the boom.
Instead of fruit of the loom.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
So this next one, number six, was put on for our good friend, all of our good friends, Marty Gordner, Pete Rose.
Should never want to blah, blah, blah.
Good old Charlie Hustle,
major
league baseball player and manager. Rose was penalized.
Or no, wait, I'm sorry. Tony always called him a cheating bastard.
Yeah.
Marty would flip out.
Who doesn't penalize?
So what? He gets steroids.
He was penalized and with permanent ineligibility for the Baseball Hall of Fame amidst accusations that he had gambled on baseball games which he played in or managed.
That's right.
The charges of wrongdoing included claims that he bet on his own team. Although he claims he never...
What does this have to do with the prison?
Well, he was there.
For that?
He was locked up there. He was an infamous inmate. So number seven infamous inmate was former NBA player Walter Bond. I didn't know this name, so that's why I didn't ask you.
Oh, okay.
He went to jail for securities fraud for setting fire to a restaurant he owned in Arvada, Canada, or Colorado. Arvada, John, Colorado.
Arvada.
2010, Bond was arrested and charged with securities fraud and running a Ponzi scheme that defrauded investors out of $20 million. Bond used his status as an NBA player to gain the trust of his victims and promised high returns on their investment. However, he used the money for personal expenses and to pay off other investors. These are just a few examples of the high-profile inmates that were housed at USP Marion over the years. The prison has a reputation for being one of the most secure and restricted federal prisons in the system and has been used to house some of the most dangerous and violent criminals in history. The exact number of suicides, because I always cover suicides, how many suicides were at the jail? The exact number of suicides at USP Marion was not readily available to the public. So they kept it very hush-hush. However, there have been several high-profile suicides over the years. One of the most well-known suicides was in 1983 when the leader of the Aryan Brotherhood prison gang, Thomas Silverstein, hold it. The Aryan Brotherhood had a
Jew name?
A Jewish name?
Silverstein.
Murdered a prison guard and he was placed in solitary confinement. He spent 36 years in solitary confinement at USP Marion. And during that time...
So, if you read this, they only touch on, what, three COs that got killed? But this is number four.
Yeah.
Like, that's not...
I don't know.
Dude, the place is wild.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah.
And I'm gonna touch on go ahead and read the rest of this and I'll touch on something I want to at the end here.
So he became one of the most notorious and isolated inmates at the prison. He attempted suicide several times during his confinement. He died of complications related to a heart condition in 2019. According to the Federal Bureau of Prisons.
The BOP.
Data available as of September 24th. 2021, there were a total of 18 suicides at Marion between 2000 and 2020. John.
First off, I highly suggest you watch this documentary.
I did watch some of it. I didn't watch the whole thing because I wanted you to have some stuff to throw in.
I think it this doesn't really do it that much justice, only because you get to see like the cell extractions, the people that were there, like the COs that were there. So the second incident of the day where I don't know if you have his name, where he killed the other CO. There's two famous.
Silverstein or the.
No, it's not the Jew.
Or the.
Shouldn't say that. You already did.
I did.
Well, too late. Too late to take it back.
Not cutting it out.
I hate the whispering sound.
I do too.
It fucking pisses me off.
I can't remember. Go ahead. Anyway.
So anyways, this guy, he wound up locked. I think they transferred him to Leavenworth. And they put him in the basement of Leavenworth, which you cannot find any information of.
Oh, no.
The basement prison of Leavenworth.
Well, Leavenworth is basically a military base.
Yeah. So he was just put in solitary confinement for the rest of his life. And he had the lights never shut off in his cell. He had cameras down on him all the time. And he got interviewed once. And I want to say it might be on like tape recording, but he has drawings of himself in the prison cell. And he
interesting.
It is interesting. It's very interesting. Like he, after a while, he had a beef with God damn it. What the hell was the CO's name?
Well,
he had a beef with the CO, and he's like, he had it coming. He pissed me off.
Was that either Merrill Klutz?
Klutz, yes.
Okay.
Klutz was due to retire, I think, like that week.
Wow.
And he denied him something. The inmate something, and the inmate killed him. They were walking on like a top tier, and the inmate was in front of Klutz, I think, and he ran over to another cell, and that inmate handed him a shank or something, and he turned around and he killed Klutz with a shank.
Yeah,
how fucked up is that?
That's fucked up.
But then after they interviewed him, and he's like, you know, at first when they interviewed him, he's like, you know, he fuck him, and he was known as like a big dude. He worked out a lot, not somebody to be fucked around with. But towards the end, he was like, I regret doing it, you know, but I did.
Yeah, I'm sure you regretted doing it.
Yeah. So I don't know how this episode's going to come out.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
We stopped like, what, five times?
Five, 6 times.
We didn't tape 45 minutes of it, but we're going to wrap this one up.
Yeah. So long for, well, you wanted this to be like 30 minutes, didn't you?
Yeah, that's not.
How long has it been?
2 hours and 8 minutes.
2 hours.
Now we're going to cut a lot of it out because a lot of it was time Chucky was down here talking to us. And
okay.
When Nathan came down and
yeah, figuring out how to sit.
Yeah. Setting everything up. Pee breaks. Okay. So we took on USP Marion. Now you guys go out and take on the world, but don't get locked up doing it.
Do not.
This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
Hold on, stop.
Welcome back to the Shit Show 2.0.
Okay, Boomer.
Damn millennials.
Wow.
Did not know that.
Even flirters who are obviously mentally ill.
You want to be my wife?
Oh, this is going to go downhill real quick.